Good evening, one and all. I know, another week, and here we are, Tuesday, and this is me, Barry, with another book and a chat. Well, February, yes. Super Bowl, Valentine's Day, my birthday. It all happens this month, doesn't it? Anyway, I am here, and so is, well, one guest, because this is one of those great things where two authors work together to produce, well, not just a book, a series of books. And I can't work out how to get two on the line at the same time. Technically challenged after 70-odd years, but that's how it is. But I have one of the authors on the show today. Now, what can I say about these two people? They are basically award or multi-award winning authors. And they have been actually, unlike other people who sort of get together and start it, they have been working together for two decades. Yeah, that long. And, well, first off, we have C.S. Kading, who is not the one that's with us. This is Charmaine. She's a poet, playwright, storyteller, whose love for writing began in the third grade. So I would have asked her, of course, about, you know, when I normally ask, were you writing things as soon as you go to crayon? That was her. But who I have on the show today is the other one of the two, the one and only Tony Fuentes. Hi, Tony. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing good. I just literally stopped working in my regular job, so now it's relaxing.
Good.
I'm attempting to.
Good for you. Now, you are, I like the way it's, Renaissance man in geek's clothing. I like that. But you're not just an author. You've got a bit of a, you're a painter, part-time occultist, got a weird imagination, which I think comes out in the book, and you like to add a bit of humour to it as well, which is great. When did you start writing? Were you the same as Charmaine, sort of pretty early on?
I don't actually remember. It's I remember reading when we were coming up with intros, and she had like writing since the third grade, and like I don't know if I was writing for that long, but I think I've been telling stories. Like
right, exactly, yeah.
As soon as I could, yeah, you know, because you're a kid and then you tell stories. Sometimes they're called lies, but
right.
sometimes they're, you know, they're stories, you know.
Yeah.
So I would say I've been doing it since I've been speaking.
No, I mean, it's interesting how you say about this, because I agree with you. I mean, I never class myself as a writer because my spelling's terrible. So I'm a storyteller, and I can remember, oh, I must have been about 9, 10, something like that. And I remember I was at scout camp, and there was one kid that was in our tent that was really, really homesick. So I started telling a story about a magic combine harvester. Something like that. And that was the first time I can think of actually telling a story to people, you know, to try to make him take his mind off being homesick and stuff like that. And it ended up I had to do a story like for almost every night for the blinking tent, you know. So that's when I started. So I do totally understand what you're saying about there. Like a lot of people, COVID drove you to basically communicating with writing in this case.
Well, COVID made the writing happen. Oddly, I mean, I've done short stories. I've sold a couple of treatments for RPGs, role-playing games.
Yeah.
You know, like the owners would say, hey, I'm looking for something where, you know, post-apocalyptic space aliens and cultists. You know, give me a couple of like treatments. So I would write a couple up, and they pay me for them. And you know, most of the time, you know, they never saw the light of day because either something else came better or the project got tanked. So
right.
I've been writing bits and pieces for years and years, but COVID was where we just sat down in order to keep sanity.
Right, indeed. It's funny you saying about the role-playing games. I didn't realise there was so much out there until, one of the things I do is sort of buy and sell, you know, on the internet, eBay and flea markets and stuff like that. And there was an auction I was covering where somebody had passed and they were really into it. And they must have had about 40, 50 different you know, different of the books, the actual examples that you use for the role playing games and that. And I didn't realize, and they are so popular, and you sort of play the sort of standard games and stuff like that, shall I say, but the actual role playing games is pretty big, isn't it?
Oh yeah. I mean, I hate, you know, heaven forbid when I pass, but when they go through my library,
right,
sell off all my books, I mean, it's a hodgepodge of, you know, various genres. I mean, there's a role-playing game for everything, pretty much. I mean, well, then again, we're role-playing adults, you know, going to work and,
right,
and being productive human beings, but
yeah,
game of life.
One of the two or three games I sort of do online all the time, I was surprised how old the rest of the people in my alliance are. I thought, you know, oh, cracky, I'm the eldest by a long way. Well, I'm the eldest, but not by a long way. You know, and you talk to the people, and they're all sort of 40, you know, 30, 40, 50, sort of around that sort of age. You know, there are a few younger people, but one of the things is, I guess, if you want to play, you've got to have a bit of money for a lot of these games, unfortunately. But it surprised me how many people do, you know, are into this sort of thing. And do you do actual Renaissance, like, fairs and stuff as well?
Yeah, I we usually do hit Renaissance fairs, about my wife and I. Although, you know, COVID kind of put the kibosh
right,
on
indeed,
that for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, we, you know, not fully dress up, but just up enough just to enjoy yourselves, because it's one thing spending money and looking nice. It's another, you know, just going with the thematics, because you want to be comfortable.
Cause
Renaissance clothing was horrible.
Oh, my goodness, yes. Yeah, I did a couple of things, and and tell you what surprised me, we were a couple of years back, we went back over to England, and we went to, oh dear, what's the castle? I can't think of the castle now. In Kent, and they actually let you try on the chainmail and stuff like that. It weighs a ton! Oh my goodness, just the helmet and that. Oh, how they put up with them and carried that away. Well, no matter, they're blinking big horses. Anyway, so COVID comes along, and who came up with the idea? I mean, I know, as I said at the beginning, you two have been working together for quite a while, you know, on crafting stories and stuff like that. So who came up with this idea for this, Sundancer series?
Well, to kind of backtrack a little bit, prior to the pandemic, or the Great Plague, however you want to call it, a group of friends and I, we were playing D&D, again, a tabletop role-playing game run by Todd Filick, who is the godfather of the setting of Sanctum. It was Todd's imagination that, you know, gave birth to all that, and then these were characters that we had created.
Okay.
And while we were just, you know, trying to keep our sanity during this, you know, the beginning of 2020, you know, having been in lockdown, we started, you know, we're very, when it comes to role-playing games, there's two types of players. There are those who like role-play, where you roll the dice and you do the thing, versus role-playing, where you know, it's that dramatic persona where, you know, we talk and whatnot. It's more about story and less about stats. So we, in this case, we decided, you know, let's figure out where Todd had started us in the game. We decided, hey, you know what? What happened before, you know, what happened when they were younger? How do these characters meet? And then we just started writing. And then what turned out to be like a small Google Doc of, you know, 10, 15 pages, you know, pretty soon it got to about 20,000 words. And like, this is a manuscript. This is not like a thing. And so we started building into it. And then working with Todd, we added more to his world, and, you know, gave names to places and gave personality, gave color and flavor to things that were largely in our imagination. And now we're, you know, giving them life, giving them names.
Right.
And that's where it all sprung from, was, you know, it was just a game that got out of hand. You can
Right, indeed. Sanctum is the name of the series. Sorry, I gave the wrong name. But talking about, you know, the people come along and the characters develop from what you started off with, the role-playing stuff, and the characters then came into the books and stuff like that. One of the big things I always go on about on the shows is the fact about the characters talking to you and, you know, leading you down different paths, minor ones, what major roles, all that sort of stuff. The fact that you came from actually sort of semi-portraying that sort of thing to the book, did you still have the characters talking to you?
Well, see, here's the funny thing. It wasn't me just writing for one character. We wrote for each other's characters because, again, we've known each other for, you know, 20 years. And so we kind of have an idea. And so sometimes it would be a back and forth where I would write something for one character and Charmaine would go, no, or she would go, no, this is spot on. You know, we would go back and forth. So, yeah, they still talk. I mean, the entire cast talks to us and complains to us.
Exactly. Oh, yes. Yeah. But, I always use this example of she was a historical romance writer, and I think it was like about her 22nd book. Yeah, she's quite well known. And we were talking about this, and she says, yeah, well, she said this book she just brought out, she said she had a real issue because she tried to kill this character off 7 times and it wouldn't die. She had to go back and rewrite the whole plot. And you talk to people, are you talking about characters and not dying? It's true, though. It's true.
Oh, yeah, yeah. In some cases, like, we had an original concept of what we were going to have, like, A, B, and C happens.
Right.
Well, as you get to B, suddenly, well, you know, the one character that we were originally going to kill off, we decided to change things around, and one character that we thought was going to be a villain did not become the villain. It evolves as we go on. I mean, we still... Much like I love comic books, I love storyboarding. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where a lot of the art stuff comes
right.
in, because I mentally draw things out. I see everything visually when it comes.
Oh, that's good. That's good. You know, yeah,
it's a movie in my head.
That's exactly what I was going to say. People go from writing to the film industry because they are able to see. As they put the words down, they're in their mind, they are seeing it is, you know, portrayed as a picture, which is great.
Yeah, and that's literally what happened when we, you know, when things played out. It's this character, like, they evolve, past the story. They gain more personality. I mean, yeah, the two main characters we both know, but everybody else, you know, as you're growing them, you're learning their nuances. I mean, it just, you give them habits and you try to make them as, I don't want to say as real as possible, but more as relatable as possible. Right. Someone that you can, that you know. It may not be you, but you know somebody like this. And so when you can confer those mental social traits on a character, they're more relatable to the audience. And that was a lot of what we try to do when we're creating even just the background characters,
right?
Because we want them to have, you know, to add into that atmosphere, so when you're thinking in your mind's eye and you're seeing things, you're going to feel things, you're like, oh, I know a guy just like that. Hey,
yes, exactly, you know? Exactly. Now, and that's it. I mean, it's like I always say, you know, we get these sort of people who've done have had illnesses or been in an abusive relationship or something like that. If they put it into a novel, you know, their own experiences, but make it into a novel, people read that and they put themselves into that person's position because perhaps it's happened to them, and they're most likely pick up things and learn things more because they are basically become part of the story in their own mind with their own, you know, what has happened to themselves, than if it's like 6 things to do and not to do sort of thing. I definitely believe in that. Yeah. One interesting thing I notice is normally orcs are not on the good side, shall I say. And you've got an orc companion here, with the lady. So, do you reckon they got a bad rap then, the orcs?
I mean, stereotypically, I mean, when we talk about fantasy and even the subject of orcs in the role-playing community, that's over the last 2 years with Wizards of the Coast, there's been a big change on how you know, it's viewed as a species within the game, and you know, in writing, and when Todd had created that as a playable option, you know, I thought, you know, I wanted to do. He explained to me how they were, and the concept of, you know, you have a creature of great intellect and great rage. So I thought about when they did Professor Hulk from, you know, way back when in the old Marvel Universe. You know, you had the body of the Hulk, but intelligence of Dr. Banner.
Right.
And just like that, orcs have anger issues. You know, they have that rage in them, and they have that cold intellect. And I felt that an interesting balance to play off of. And when we were creating these characters, you know, I wanted, you know, playing the priest, the cleric type character, I wanted to, you know, look like the scary guy, but, you know, playing the... One of my favorite books has always been Frankenstein, and that concept of the monster being more human than the people around them. I've always loved that. So I gave me that opportunity to playing technically one of the scariest looking humanoids, but at the same time being the most human among them sometimes, depending on how you look at it.
Right. Your first book was Sansa Setesh. It won you a few awards, didn't it?
Yeah, a couple. Charmaine had submitted a couple to various things, and it's gotten, I believe, a Titan Award and an Indie Brag and a couple of others. The submission, I was, you know, as soon as the books were done, we hopped onto another project and. Mm-hmm. And it's been so. That's a lot of her handiwork.
Right.
Yeah, it's gotten a couple of awards. People liked it, and we, you know, then we had to do a second one because it was essentially a TBD or to be continued.
Yeah.
That to be determined.
Yeah.
I've been writing that a lot today.
Right. Because I mean, when you set out, was it the idea of it a one-off, or were you thinking, oh, this could make a trilogy, or this could make a series? What was the initial thoughts?
When we started it, it was ideally going to be a one-off, and then about midway through, it suddenly thought, well, you know, if we do it as a one-off, then it's got to be definitive. But there's so much there. There's so much more material there. That we decided, you know, we could technically try for a trilogy. So that's the goal is, you know, we're in the early stages. We're about maybe a little less than 10, 11 chapters in on book number 3. But we know how our stories end. So to
right.
Speak.
So you've got a target to get to. It's just how long it takes you to get there.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Again, we're back to the A, B, C.
Yeah.
Now we're just in the middle of B.
Yeah, it's interesting. I there's a lot of people who start off, and, it's going to be a trilogy. It's going to be a trilogy. Yeah, that's what I plan. And then they sort of think, oh, well, you know, people ask about this and people are, and I either have to do a prequel or a sort of extension number 4 book and stuff like that because they suddenly realise there are bits missing and people want to know the information sort of thing. Book number 2, Forests of Avalon. That's out December, was that came out?
Yeah, December 11th of this past year.
And what sort of reception did that get?
So far, so good. I want to say it's got snagged an award or two already, I think. I'm not sure. I get kept busy because Charmaine is looking at a lot, you know, these submissions. Meanwhile, I got started on another project for Sandancer Publications, which is our combined. We decided to give ourselves a name, and that was we borrowed it from one of the concepts that we created in the book, the Sandancer Guild.
Mm-hmm.
So we made it into our publishing group.
Right. That's what confused me at the beginning. That's why I got the book wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, why not? You know, this day and age, it's there, and you've got everything under your control. Then I think that's great. And of course, this book has got the Literary Titan Gold Award for fantasy already. So, not bad, eh?
it's doing something.
Right.
I don't know. You get kind of, even though I know I wrote it and I know I did, I put things into it, you still feel a little shock afterwards.
Yes.
When you see people who like it and like, you really liked it? Are you sure it was my book?
Yeah. Believe me, I remember reading my book, one of my books at New York airport, one of the New York airports, because I was flying home and the plane was delayed, and I was taking a couple of book copies of my book home to the family, and I'm reading through it and I'm thinking, I don't remember writing that. That's not words I use. Who wrote that?
Like right now, when we were writing the second book, I had a copy of the first book sitting at my side, mm-hmm. because there were things I started talking about something like, did I mention this already? I'm having
yes.
to go back and yeah. looking through the Google document.
Yeah.
I'm having to search things, and it's because we, our biggest thing always has been continuity
yeah.
when it comes to all of this.
Yeah.
And one of the things we sat down with was trying to figure out a timeline, like how long her stay was when in the first book when Isolde came to
right.
Satesh, and how long did all this, from the beginning to the end of the book, how long did that take? And then, okay, we figured that out. And then how long did it take to get from here to here? And how
yep.
long, this timeline of getting to Avalon and then the events that happened in that book, how long did it all take? And we're like, wow, no wonder adventurers are always worn and tired and haggard. It's a very short amount of time and a high level of stress.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
It may take us, it takes us, nine, 10 months to get through everything and edit everything. But, for these characters, it's been like, for some of these things, it's like a week and a half. And they're like, oh, this is why it feels so long, but
yeah.
it's so short.
Yeah, indeed. No, I can totally understand and relate to that. When you did the first book and stuff like that, obviously from your sort of past experiences, but one of the things that a lot of people find, which they didn't expect, was the amount that once you've finished the book and it's printed and out there, basically that's when the work starts to get get it out there, get the name out there and stuff like that. Were you prepared for that?
No. I deal a lot with social media
right.
and various things, but it's it's for fun things and little projects and artsy things,
mm-hmm.
things I got cooking going on.
That's yep.
that's easy, but when you're looking at trying to get something like this out and trying to understand it, the almighty algorithms, understanding ads, looking at when things are best put out and how much money you got to put in, and
yep.
It's a bit daunting, and there's no how-to guide. And even if there is a how-to guide, who's to say that how-to guide is going to be right for you? There's
exactly.
No
it's it's never the
yeah.
same for everybody. It really isn't. It amazes me sometimes. People say, "Oh, this book's brilliant. It's going to make it." I've given. So I had one person gave up their job. I just written this book. This is going to be terrific. It's going to, it's going to be. I've given up my job, and that's it. And they hadn't even, they hadn't even sort of. Literally sort of pushed it to anybody or anything like that. And, oh dear. Anyway, third book. When you're looking for the third one to come out?
Theoretically, we're looking near the end of the year. Another end of the year push, like
mm-hmm.
around Christmas or maybe earlier. It honestly depends. The first book was, I want to say offhand, about 350 pages. This last book was, quite a bit bigger, and I'm like almost afraid to think about what's going to happen for this
yeah,
one.
Right.
I think of like Robert Jordan books and
yep.
how the print got smaller. The
they did.
Got
the
thinner,
books.
And
the books are huge. The last ones.
You could commit homicide with one of those.
You
books
could
like the original hard copy. I can't even imagine.
I remember reading the first ones and nice book. And then the sort of about. I don't know, about the sort of fourth, fifth, sixth, what have you, and they're like 2 inches thick almost. As you say, the writing gets smaller.
Oh yeah, I really think at some point during the 80s and at some point, there was a group of book nerds who were completely ripped just because they had to haul this book and lift it up. Their arms and their biceps were absolutely amazing.
Oh, of course, now it started on TV because the first series is out. I binge watched it 2 weeks ago, so I don't know it all. But, yeah, the first series was on. What's it on? Netflix. Amazon, wasn't it? Yeah.
Amazon.
Yeah.
Amazon Prime.
Yeah. And it wasn't too bad. It was fairly close to the book, I thought, for the first. But I know as the books went in, I started getting confused with who, what, where and how. You know, when the characters ended up splitting into different places and stuff. I was a little bit confused with that. And that's why the books got bigger, I think, because... Yeah, trying to make all the characters there. Anyway, talking about characters, it's been great to meet yourself and to discuss your characters. But what I'm going to do now, Tony, is just hand the show over to you so you can tell everybody where they can find out more about you and, of course, your books.
You can find us online at sanddancerpublications.info. Our books are currently on Amazon. The first book, Sansa's Attached, and the second book, Forest of Avalon, all of them on Kindle as well as hard copies, paperback. Both C.S. Cating, myself, can be found on Facebook, Instagram, pretty much all your social media. And one of the other projects, which is currently also eating up some of my time, is our Fantasy Footnotes podcast.
Oh, okay.
You can find it on Stitcher. You can find it on Amazon Music, Spotify, pretty much anywhere where podcasts can be handed out on RSS feeds.
Oh, there you go. Well, great chatting to you. Perhaps when your third book comes out, you'll come back, or I'll see if I can work it out. We'll get both of you back again, and we'll talk about the third book.
One post at one point.
Right, okay. Anyway,
online,
it's been great chatting to you, and good luck. It's nice to see hear such a success story. So thank you very much, and good luck.
Thank you, and thank you for having us and me.
My pleasure.
Take care.
Thank you. Well, there you go. How about that? Great series it is. Sandancer Publications. So you can find looking at sanddance.pub, which I'm looking at where it is. And this is going to be a trilogy. Possibly not. Might end up being four. You never know. But Sanctum series, Sansa Setesh, and the new one, which came out in December, called Forest of Avalon. As I said, the third one going underway, and not going to be far off getting to that soon. I think end of this year, so that's great. And hopefully we're getting back on when we get to the third one. I think it's called Longest Night, the third one, perhaps. I don't know. Anyway, it looks like it could be from the thing. That's it! Anyway, I'll be back tomorrow, but until then, as always, we've got one thing left to say. Don't forget... Make sure we got it.